Welcome to Iteration, a podcast about programming, development, and design. My name is John. I'm a software developer for a home services startup, and I am joined, as always, by JP. Hey, JP.
How's it going, John? So my name is JP. I am a developer based out of Los Angeles, California. And today we are going to be talking about some very interesting things, all centered around what is it like to break into the industry of software development, starting from absolutely nothing. How is that for an intro?
Yeah, I think that's super solid. I'm really excited to dig into these questions. So just for a little bit more context, JP's got a friend. We'll leave him nameless for now. How's that sound?
Yeah, he could be nameless.
All right, nameless friend who is like looking over at JP's cushy job, even in the middle of a pandemic, working from home, making great money. And he's like, hey, buddy, how do I get in on that? No, I don't know that that's true. But, you know, I feel like I get this email at least once every quarter, like the old friend from high school, like, hey, you work in tech, right? How do you get into that? What's the deal? Or those Instagram messages of, hey, like I listen to the podcast and I want to get started. I'm just getting started. I just did a treehouse course. Like, how do I really get into this thing? And I hope that this episode, maybe a two-parter, will be able to point to be kind of the definitive guide on how to really get your hands dirty and break into tech. I'm curious to know, do you have any more context, JP, of like why this friend is interested? Like what got him to reconsider career change? Is he in a career now looking for a change or kind of just getting started?
I don't know. And I don't want to speak for him. We couldn't get him onto the podcast, unfortunately.
We tried.
And he'll probably be listening to this, which is pretty cool because, you know, he's known that we've had this podcast for like 2 years now and has listened to like some episodes, but like had zero context over like what the hell we were talking about.
He'd probably be so lost as a newbie.
Yeah. And that was like when we first were doing like domain-driven design stuff. But yeah, so the context here is that my friend, who shall not be named, is historically a civil engineer. So he went to school for civil engineering and actually even like passed all of the exams that he needed to take to become like a licensed professional engineer.
Oh, shit. Like a PE. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not quite sure what that like aha moment was where he was like, shit, you know what? I'm going to go for it. But he's very much interested in, I think, creating things. I've always sort of noticed that he likes to create stuff in some form. I think we all do, right? Like whether it's creating like a cool front end UI widget thing or like creating a cool sexy service object. I don't know. I'm just kidding. I don't think anyone's ever said that.
I have. Come on.
But nevertheless, I think that he was just potentially not satisfied with the kind of work that he was doing as a civil engineer. He's worked government jobs. He's worked private jobs. And I think something just changed and was like, hey, I kind of want to give this web dev thing a shot. And he sees that cool. I do it. And I don't know. That's the only, I guess, context that I can set.
Yeah. And I get, like I said, I get similar messages and emails of people like, hey, I'm either looking to change careers or I'm just starting to college. Should I do college? Should I do a boot camp? I've gotten that question at least six times. You know, should I do this college for comp sci or should I go to the boot camp? And what does that look like? Mm-hmm. So you had this friend of yours put together a list of questions like, hey, what are your first kind of five or six questions? So let's jump right into this first question. What do you say? I'll read it off and we can kind of start picking it apart.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, so hold on. Before we get into that, we should probably set the stage that I begged him to come onto this episode. Maybe not begged. I asked nicely, like, hey, would you be down to come on this episode, be interviewed by John and myself, and just sort of like to see what it's like to see through the lens of like your lens.
A newbie. Totally. Yeah. Someone wanting to know and like talk through these things in real time. But instead, yes, we kind of got a list of questions.
We did. Right. Yes. Which we will now be going through in.
All right. So question one is, this is a very hard question. And JP and I have different answers. So I'm excited about that. So if you only had 6 to 8 months to study web development, what would you prioritize? Vanilla JS, React, Node? Do you feel like this is enough time to become proficient in JS? So let's first each answer that question. Is 6 to 8 months enough time? And then we'll go into detail on our recommendation. So first, JP, is that enough time? 6 to 8 months to like really get good?
Yes. I think, I don't know. I think so. I mean, there are boot camps that are like 3 to 4 months.
They promise like 30 days and you'll be a Google engineer, right?
Yeah.
God, I see those Instagram ads.
It's just so hard for me to even think about this, though, because he's focusing on front end. And for me to think of just purely from the lens of like, mm-hmm. is 6 to 8 months enough to be proficient at front end development. Honestly, like, yeah, I think it is. I think 6 months is like not plenty of time, but it is time to learn like enough, right? Enough to be dangerous at least.
So my answer is yes, it's enough time if you're really nearly full time on this thing.
Right.
Like if you're really giving it minimum 24 hours a week, but more like 30 hours a week solid, ideally even more, then yeah, 6 to 8 months can really make you proficient as a developer, whether you want to be full stack, back end or front end, depending on what that kind of angle looks like. That's a lot of time. And if you're really consistent and disciplined and have a good system and good community, which he's starting that journey now through your friendship, which is a big leg up, I think that that is more than enough time to be very eligible for a real job in a year from now, like a real job at a real firm. You know, but now let's go into the specific recommendations. So, you know, he asked specifically, if you only had 6 to 8 months to study web development, what would you prioritize? And he's coming in from nothing. And to be clear, he's looking to be a front end developer specifically, which I think is a great niche to get into right now, because I would say 70% of the LinkedIn recruiter emails I get is, you do React, you've done React, come do React. Like that's what people are looking for out there. And there's a lot of work out there if you're a good front end developer for sure.
Yeah.
So what do you think of the specifics? What would be your attack plan in 6 to 8 months?
Right. So this is like, give me the syllabus. What would you do for the next 6 to 8 months? And I sat down and I thought about this, and if I was to go back and tell myself starting from scratch, cause I'm like a self-taught developer. Like I came from, the only experience I ever had was like making MySpace layouts, I don't know, 15 years ago. Right. So like I've done some stuff, but basically nothing. So what I would tell myself is in that first month, just time box 1 month to practice doing like algorithms. So like Exorcism is a good place to like practice like random, you know, tiny basic algorithms. You know, people have done like LeetCode code and stuff. But I would just time box 1 month because there is going to be the temptation to derail yourself and practice studying algorithms in month two and in month three and in month four. And then it ends up being this like time suck. So in my opinion, I think that like you should just get it all out of the way at the front, because like one, you get it out of your system, and two, it's like, I'm doing air quotes, like the fundamentals, right? And it will like teach you like discipline on how to like think about problems and how to struggle through problems and how to like, you know, understand complex, how to understand complex logic as it relates to like programming, right? So like, you know, writing a really complex recursive dynamic programming algorithm, like bottom up algorithm, is probably going to be like the hardest thing you do, right? Because like in our jobs, writing the code is normally the easy part. There's like, as a software developer, writing the actual code is like not what is hard about our jobs, in my opinion. But that's like a conversation for another day. So that's just month one.
Month one. Okay. So I am going to quickly disagree and say that I would have gone insane and torn my hair out if I started with month one with the algorithms. Like for me, I'm somebody who has to see something, and my starting point I'd recommend is HTML, like not even touch code or logic flow at all. But I'll let you keep going, because I'll walk through my recommended syllabus in a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
I just think everybody's different. I think it's important. Like, if you could have done it this way, you would have. And I totally believe that.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's month one. Month two is then when I start jumping into, like, HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and, like, really understanding, like, the DOM and how you can make websites. And I understand that that's, like, a huge shift. And it's almost like, well, how do algorithms relate to HTML? Mm-hmm. But I think the thing there is that, like, this is just like me coming in with foresight. Like this is how I would do it. Because all at the end of the day, all coding is just like solving some kind of problem, right? Like solving and like writing an algorithm versus like writing some complex CSS. It's all just like problem solving. It might not seem related, but like, I don't know, you're flexing that or you're exercising that muscle. So you get the basics down, you build some websites. And then in month three is when I would start tackling like a JavaScript framework. Now, whether that's Vue or if that's React or if that's, I don't know, whatever the new hotness is, I would just like take a course and stick to it. Follow along, you know, one of those like build along courses where you like build a Trello clone or like you build like a Cards Against Humanity clone. I've seen that.
Yeah.
just do that. And it's going to be one of those things where you follow along a course and you don't really understand what's going on, but you're still like coding along and you're seeing stuff on the screen happen. I think that in and of itself is pretty valuable because like you might not understand it as you're doing it, but it's like a nice quick win to see like some kind of interactivity, especially on front end work. And the benefit there is that like you'll look back on it and be like, oh, now I totally get that. Or like you'll have,
yep.
Inevitably you'll have one of those aha moments where you're like, oh, I get why we did that thing in that course. So I think just like absorbing as much as possible and being a sponge, whether or not you actually understand everything is like, is pretty crucial for the first 3 months. So then like in the, I don't know, I'm going to just like generalize the later half because that's like the first 3 months. I think like the final half should be like build something that's non-trivial. Like build something that you did on your
own. What's non-trivial though? Like what do you, like what kind of level of
okay.
complexity?
You're right. I think yeah. it depends I'm glossing yeah. over what non-trivial is.
Which is okay.
Yeah. So yeah. in my head, when I say like build something that's non-trivial, I just mean something that is where you didn't follow along. Like it's fine if you make like a YouTube clone. Okay. But like, don't have someone like hold your hands along the way. Come up with a project mm-hmm. that's like doable that you think you can potentially tackle, and maybe even a little bit outside of your comfort zone. Because like obviously you want to stretch yourself, and see it all the way through with mm-hmm. just like an asterisk on all the way through, because you're probably not gonna do it all the way through like yeah. from what you initially think you are. I cannot tell you how many different clones of websites where I got like 60% there, because I didn't realize how big of a website it is.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I'm going to interject for a second, talk to this idea of, you really described the first 3 months as really following very prescriptive tutorials, build along type of programs. And then the last 3 months as trying to use those skills you're building on your own and do something kind of on your own, maybe a little bit more open-ended than following those exact prescriptive programs. And
yep.
I've mentioned this in the past, but it's something I want to mention to the new friend trying to learn if they're listening, which is I've met a lot of developers their first year in who still are looking for very prescriptive direction. Like, this is how you write a controller. This is how you write an index view. This is how you write it. Instead of being able to apply general concepts and skills. So as you're looking through and going through these build along and step-by-step prescriptive programs, it's almost like you're cooking with recipes and you're having to look at the recipe book the whole time. But make sure you keep your head up above it and realize, okay, I'm learning to saute. I'm learning that when I use a lot of cream, I should use something acidic with that to balance out that richness. Like, learn the concepts, because that's what's so important about your approach here, which I really like, is that the last half is, okay, now put the recipe book down for a second and start using the concepts you've learned to cook. Because a lot of newer devs I've worked with who were struggling were really looking for that prescriptive, like, how do I do this? And it's like, well, in the real world, you don't know how to do it. You have to apply a lot of the concepts and skills you have and recompose those skills, like recompose those recipes into completely new dishes. And I think that's a skill that is really important to learn, and a piece of confidence is important to learn. So that's why I like your kind of month 4 or 5, you got to build something on your own.
Yeah. And so I think overall the takeaway here for my approach is that while you're in the first like 2 months and you're doing like these build alongs and you're doing these tutorials, like absolutely try to apply what you learned and build something really tiny. Right. But like, the reason that I think that the later half should be like build something big is because I want to be a little bit deliberate, a little bit more deliberate about how you spend your time, because I think one of the mistakes I made very early on was just like not having focus. I would be like, oh, I'm learning this thing and now I'm going to build this huge mm-hmm. app. And then I would like get 30% the way of building this huge app. And then like, just end up burning a ton of time where I would like flip-flop back and forth between like reading docs and then like building a huge app. Like it just mm-hmm. doesn't work. And I ended up wasting more time than if I had just like, I just said like, you know what, screw it. Okay. For the next 3 weeks, I'm going to be like doing tutorials and I'm going to be like learning things. Like I'm going to be in the learn mode. I think doing too many things at the same time and like diverting your attention ultimately ends up turning into time wasted, but that's just me. Like maybe you, I don't know, everybody learns different, right? Mm-hmm. But I
think that's really important to acknowledge.
Yeah.
So let's keep pushing through your syllabus. So you're saying month 4 or 5, build something non-trivial. I think we've described enough of what that is. Yep. And then what is the kind of last time spent?
Yes. So I think the last, like, I don't know, month 6 to 8 should really just be like doing that all over again. Like revisiting the docs, revisiting the fundamentals. And when I say doing that all over again, it's that, like I said, in month 2, you should be like, I don't know, watching tutorials and reading documentation on like MDN, like Mozilla Developer Network, and just like reading through JavaScript docs. I think there's a lot to say about like revisiting something you previously had like learned or like had tried to teach yourself, because I think that second pass, you'll be like very surprised on what actually starts to stick. And even like the third pass or the fourth pass or the fifth pass. And then like pretty soon it'll just become, I don't know, second nature to you. So I think that like last bit of it should just be like reviewing and studying and constantly like seeing the same things over and over and over again.
That makes a ton of sense. So, all right, that's JP's recommended curriculum. I'm going to blow through hopefully faster my recommended I think this is a big part of the episode, which is like, what do I do for the next 6 months?
Right,
and I think
right.
that's one of the core questions. So that's okay that we're taking more time on it. So I think you're absolutely insane to start with algorithms. Like I mentioned, that would drive me crazy. So here's my approach. Okay. Month one, HTML. And the big theme on my syllabus is always be deploying. So within the first week, you should have an ugly ass vanilla HTML website live. No CSS, nothing. Like actually put it into the world and build a website that does something for somebody. And then week two, learn the basics of CSS and then like deploy that website that has some style, and you get bonus points if you do something like custom web fonts or images in your website or figure out multi-page navigation. To me, it's all about getting something on screen and getting just the muscle memory of the things like navigating your file system and dealing with the black and white text. Like I remember how scary that was in the beginning. So like get something on screen. And so then by the end of that first month, like you should be pretty familiar with HTML, CSS, the terminal, Git, GitHub, the basics of hosting and domains. And actually at that point, like you actually could make $15 or $20 an hour freelance on Upwork, like literally in a month. You probably could start doing that. Month two, JavaScript. Like keep it vanilla JavaScript or avoid any library, avoid jQuery or anything like that. BeginnerJavaScript.com is great. JavaScript 30 is another great resource. Add some man activity to your site. Again, deploy it. Ship that fucking website live. At this point, maybe do a little bit of algorithm bullshit, like exorcism stuff. Because now you have some context for what JavaScript even is,
right,
in my mind. But I could be wrong about that. But like, you know, by the end of month two, you should be confident in reading and writing JavaScript functions, selecting and interacting with the DOM, the HTML elements, like maybe some lightweight API stuff, maybe get like a Stripe credit card form in there. And at this point, like you can make 20, 25 bucks an hour. And you could even like build an MVP with like a low code, no code backend. If you know HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, you can kind of glue something shitty together and actually like sell something drop shipped on a Shopify site that you customized. And like my bias is always going to be toward like getting it in the world, starting to try to make money, because the more real that it gets, the more that you can start applying that like algorithmic knowledge more. So I think by month three, you're probably ready for a framework. So you understand how the DOM works, how the JavaScript works. Now let's start introducing some type of React. If you want to be a front-end dev, it's the number one recommendation I would make. Vue's great. There's other hotness probably by the time you listen to this. JavaScript changes a lot, but React's pretty solid right now. And then I think month four, and so like by month three, if you've got that, you know, if you can deploy something like using Firebase or Airtable, like you probably can make now 25, 30 bucks an hour on Upwork and pretty quickly make that kind of money. And now you can be paid to do this homework, which is really motivating. Having a shitty client down your neck, it's good to do. Taking on small side work, if you can find another dev and just help them out for small amounts, I strongly encourage it. This is probably a very different approach than other developers, but if I was to start from scratch, this is totally month four. I would move from React into Gatsby and CMS systems, especially if you want to be a front-end developer. So that's based on React, but now it's like a framework on a framework to deploy static sites. I think it's a really good thing to learn. And so by this, honestly, you are a front-end web developer. You have all the basic skills you need to develop an HTML website, style it, add interactivity, and deploy it. You've got the basics by month four. And so then in my mind, month five, probably get into a little bit of backend. So spend a month learning either Next.js, Node, Rails even could be a good option. Learn some of the basics and build something more full stack. And then really the last month is really build something real using everything you know. And I know that this person is looking to do front-end development, but I think if you completely ignore back-end, you'll be giving yourself a huge disservice not understanding how this stuff all wires up together. At some point, you've got to get your hand on the full stack. And I think my theme is like, always be deploying, like no matter what, actually ship your thing into the world and like get it in your GitHub, get a link live, text it to some friends. I remember one of my first, I did two big websites that kind of got really popular with my friends. One was Pick My Lunch. It was like pickmylunch.johnsals.com or something when it went live, right? And it basically used the Yelp API and gave you a few, it gave you the five closest restaurants. And you entered your zip, it gave you the five closest restaurants, and then you picked, you vetoed three. No, you vetoed two, and then it would pick one from the three randomly. So it would just pick your lunch. And I had all my friends using this app and giving me feedback. It's like, where the fuck do I eat, that website? It's like the same thing.
That's
I copied
so
it.
Cool. Okay.
And then the other one that I did is I had this group chat, Facebook message friends group that we were all sharing memes with each other. And so I made this website, lolsworthkeeping.com. And that became our group chat where we were sharing GIFs and like memes with each other. It's not live anymore, so don't go looking for it. But those two things, like sharing those URLs with my friends and them being like, dude, this is fucking shitty. I can't add this big GIF, or like all that feedback really pushed me to figure it out and get it live and actually had something in the world. So that would be my syllabus. I will put both of our full syllabuses in the show notes. I think it's important to have the two different perspectives, and those are different. So come at me, JP. Where do you think I got it wrong or right?
No, what I really liked about yours is that it's kind of framed to probably better answering the question than I did, because it's like, how do I do this in 6 to 8 months? And you have a very direct approach of like, by this month, you're actually worth something
this much
as like, yeah, as an hourly rate, which I think is like useful to know, because I think that with how prevalent imposter syndrome is, like you don't realize that you can be productive and valuable on Upwork after just like a couple of months. Like even just being technical enough to like deploy a static website, most people don't have like the patience for that. Like they're hiring somebody to do that. And I think that's valuable. I think it's interesting that your month three and my month three are like kind of the same. Like by month three, do React or like do a JavaScript
framework.
Yeah,
that's true.
But like
that's a good insight.
But like the 2 months leading up to that are very much different.
So different.
And I realized that I don't think that my syllabus will get you like web dev ready in 6 months. I think that my first 6 months are actually just like building a foundation, because right, like my last like 2 months are just like, hey, revisit everything again and like just drill that. So I think my like where my syllabus falls short is that like mine is more of like a longer play. Like if you have like not 6 to 8 months, but if you have like 12 to 14 months, right?
Yeah,
then that's
the
what
thing
the first
that I
Yeah.
The thing that I don't like about mine is it only has 1 month of you going on your own. Every months 1 through 5 are falling very prescriptive, kind of like, okay, do a Gatsby course. Now do a Next.js course. And it's super overly prescriptive, and it's too much time being prescriptive. So I think your month 4 or 5 of sink or swim, go build something non-trivial, is probably really, really valuable. So I think that's something to call out, to not allow yourself to be too overly prescriptive in what I've laid out, I think is a big piece of that. So let's move to the next question, because I think we've spent a lot of time on the syllabuses. I think that was super valuable.
Yeah.
So question two, how do you avoid becoming inundated with technical resources? And I think this is great for someone who's not even a junior, because I even feel this far into my web development career, 6-7 years in now.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, if you know the answer to this, please tell me.
Yeah, that's so funny. They give some more context here. They say, currently I'm jumping between Treehouse, front end masters, YouTube videos, reading books, etc. It can be really overwhelming, but I feel like having multiple resources might be good. So it's like, where do you balance that? So what are your tips on this, JP?
Yeah, I think, because this is what I was talking about, right? Like, it's really easy to lose focus and be like, I want to do this.
Oh,
no,
this
I want
course
to do this.
Is better. This course, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's just so easy to be distracted, which is sort of why I was like, just do algorithms and get it out of your system, because you're inevitably, you know, I'm a programmer, like, I'm going to do algorithms, and like, you hear how important they are. And so, like, it's easy to draw your attention away from them.
You can just put them off for 5 years like I have. That's fine. I'm only half joking.
Right. And me too. I mean, I've put it off a lot as well. But I think the thing that I would tell myself of like how to avoid becoming inundated is to just realize that there is so much out there that it's going to be impossible to learn everything. I mean, that's like part of the job. You're always going to be learning. And I think it's important to know that, like, you're not going to know everything, and to just, like, start getting comfortable with the fact that there are unknowns. Because, like, even in the job that I currently have, there are problems where I'm like, I have no idea how the fuck I'm going to do that. But I guarantee mm-hmm. if you give me enough time, I will be able to figure it out. So I think it's, like, yeah. understanding that you can't know everything. And also, like, with this whole, like, I'm on Treehouse, I'm on Udemy, I'm on Frontend Masters. That's fine. There, like I said, there's going to be resources out there. Just, like, pick one. Just pick one and stick to it and see a single tiny course all the way through. And then move on to the next thing, right? Like yeah. you said in the past, like how do you eat an elephant? It's like one
bite at a time.
One bite at a time, right?
Yeah, that's right, baby. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I plus one super hard this idea of whatever you do, see it all the way through. Pick a course and just stick with it. It doesn't matter if it's the best course out there. It doesn't matter if it's the best one. Like, if it's resonating with you and you can make it through the first three videos, stick through the last 24 and just get through the freaking course. I think it's really important to not be in the middle. It's like trying to read three books all on accounting at the same time.
Wow.
Like, it's just not going to work for you. And that's what this is. This stuff's not super engaging. It can be interesting, but it's not super engaging. And people are going to teach it in different ways. They might be on different versions. If you're doing a React course, they're going to be different from each other. No, that's a very real thing.
It is.
They're on different versions of React, and so they'll be writing the JSX in different ways. And you'd be like, wait, why are they putting style tags in the JavaScript? Why is there ever CSS in the JavaScript?
We all wonder that. That's so funny.
Start a hot button issue. But no, the idea here is, like, stick with one course and finish it. And there's actually technical reasons why that's important. So yeah, I think that it's okay to not have to have every single angle and approach. Find someone who resonates with you. You know, I really like Treehouse. I really like Wes Boss's stuff. There's a lot of good stuff on Go Rails for me, for Rails specifically, stuff that really resonates with me. But you just got to find what works for you. And there's so many amazing resources out there, which is awesome. But you can do multiple courses, but don't do two React courses or two HTML courses or two JavaScript courses. If you're going to do, like, sure, do a design course and an HTML course and a React course, but don't do multiple of the same thing at the same time. Strong recommend against that. And try to finish what you start.
Wow. It's kind of funny. It's like, would you read a Harry Potter book and a Lord of the Rings book at the same time? No way.
Fuck that. Yeah. And that's kind of what you're doing to yourself. And it's just like, you're not going to try to watch the DC universe and the Marvel universe at the same time, like flip-flopping movies. It's
right.
Like,
right.
No, you're not going to do that.
Wow. That's such
but it feels productive because you're trying to, like, get all the information. Mm-hmm. But you have to realize it's not going to be consistent. So you'll just be even more confused and frustrated in different stages. I don't think it's going to work. All right, three. Read it off. I've been reading the questions.
All right, number three. This is funny. It's about algorithms. So number three, solving algorithms versus building real projects. What value does each hold? And then he says in parentheses, like, well, maybe JavaScript algorithms are really only useful for coding interviews. So what are your thoughts on that? You can go first on this question.
Yeah, I think he's right. JavaScript algorithms are really only directly useful for coding interviews, but they're important. And I think they're conceptually a thing. It's a thing that you need to know, but it's less, like, I don't reach for algorithms every day. It's not something that you're going to use every day. So I have a strong bias toward real world projects and spending more time in real world progress. That's also been the nature of my career. Like, I've started with very small startups and slowly worked my way up to larger startups. And so I wasn't trying to get a job at a Facebook or an Open Door. I was trying to get jobs that, like, that was more based on show me your work, show you can be scrappy, show me what you've shipped, and less so technical interviews. I've only had a couple actual technical interviews in my life. And so I would say algorithms and programming are helpful, but algorithms are more helpful as you gain more context for the real world. And so I would say it's something like, at most, a 70-30 split, 70% real world code, 30% kind of conceptual algorithmic work at most. That's where I would keep it, especially early in your career. I've had seasons and stints where everything I'm learning is very conceptual and kind of design models or processes or algorithm process or algorithm work. But to me, especially early on, it's just going to be lost on you. And you're going to be, like, doing these sort algorithms. And I mean, yeah, that's my two cents. But I think JP might be on the other side of that. I'm not sure.
Maybe. I wrote it depends, which is hilarious. I hate that answer. I hate saying it, too. I love that answer.
It's such a cop-out. It.
Yeah.
And it's such a mature answer to me. Like, yeah, it depends.
Yeah. But I guess, like, where I land on that is that I think it's really important to be able to solve really, really basic, easy algorithms that, like, you and I could solve with just like Ruby magic, right? Like Ruby methods, right? Because like, should you be able to do like really complex algorithms that are like 40 lines long? You know, arguably no, it probably doesn't matter. But like, should you know how to do basic algorithms, even if it's like not the most efficient way to do it? I think there's value in being able to like at least solve them, whether or not it's like quote unquote the right way to do it, like the right computer science-y way to do it. But like, shit, if you can like solve an algorithm using like Squish and like Slice and Map in Ruby, like who cares? Like that's something. I know that that's like Ruby and not JavaScript, but I couldn't come up with any.
But to me, once you're past FizzBuzz and once you're past like 99 bottles of beer on the wall,
right,
you're probably good. That's like, that's my line, and your line might be different. Like when you think about like, you know, spending hours and hours trying to crack the Facebook interview whiteboard questions is probably the worst use of your time in the first 3 months of trying to become a front-end dev.
Sure.
That's the argument I would make. Where it's like, should you be able to confidently write a FizzBuzz and have some good algorithms in there to do it? It's like stupid calling that an algorithm. Or like pluck things from a database and sort things and like work with data? Absolutely. I totally buy that. And until you can work with the fundamentals of manipulating data and logic, that's important, and you should probably bias it stronger until you can get to that point. But once you can like get to that point and you can do something like FizzBuzz or 99 bottles of beer on the wall with a few lines of code, you're probably on your way to being at a point where you should probably start shipping real things. That would be my two cents.
Right, right. I think I might be, my tolerance for the level of complexity might be a little bit higher than yours, but like certainly not as crazy as like you should spend 6 months on LeetCode and understand like algorithmic complexity. I mean, if you're for a front end dev, I think that's like a waste of time, at least early on. Like who knows, maybe later on in your career or maybe on later on in your journey, you want to dive that deep.
And I think that's an important difference to call out in our careers, because like you pretty quickly went to larger firms and companies where like a technical interview was a very real concern and a very real decider of whether you got those jobs. And if you didn't spend that time doing those exorcism exercises, you probably wouldn't have gotten landed that great job at Open Door or whatever it was, whatever your career has been thus far. Mm-hmm. And my career has been more scrappy. So part of it depends on, do you want to be working with startups? Do you want to be doing an agency? Or are you going to have to be impressing some engineering manager at some mid-sized startup? Mm-hmm. And those are like some of the balance you have to strike, I think. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. And I mean, there's just so many facets to an interview. Like you as a person are not just made up of like how good you can solve algorithms. You also have to have like good soft skills, which we have an episode on, and like projects that you've worked on, and be able to like talk through problems that you solved. So like, even if you can solve the world's hardest algorithm, that doesn't mean that like you're a shoo-in for the job that you're trying to land.
Yeah. All right. Next one. Four. I think this is a really, really good question. We're going to try to get through all six here, and we only have a little bit more time. So how to stand out as a candidate? Projects on GitHub other than something you built in a coding boot camp. So what does that look like? How do you stand out as a candidate?
Yes. I think just be able to answer this question, and I think you'll be fine, which is like obviously easier said than done. But the question is that I've personally have been asked tons of times in interviews is, tell me something interesting that you've worked on. And I remember the first time I was asked that, when all the only experience I've ever had was working on WizTutor, and I was like, I don't know, do you think that debugging Stripe is interesting? Like, obviously, no, that's not interesting at all, but that just showed like the lack of experience that I've had, and that the fact that I haven't like worked on anything that was like non-trivial. So it doesn't matter if like you've, the only things you've worked on are like personal projects. I mean, because if you can speak to that as like an interesting problem through the lens of your newbie eyes, I think that says a lot about like who you are as like an incoming developer. Because if all you can say to like the most interesting thing I've worked on is, I don't know, working on a JavaScript snake or JavaScript tic-tac-toe, like you're very
like
quickly
every single
shut
other tutorial thing that everyone else has done.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I definitely plus one this idea of being able to answer that question. I think that's very well said. Tell me something interesting you've worked on, and not jumping right into, well, I used a Postgres data board.
Like, right, right.
Try to keep it a story and an interesting story, and also demonstrate technical expertise in a way that's approachable, I think is really important. So I definitely plus one that. I've got a couple like more to the metal ones, because I've been doing a ton of interviews, hiring some people. And number one, put readmes in your fucking GitHub code. I can't tell you how many people send me their GitHub, and they have all these folders and they just read me as the default Boilerport Rails read me or Next.js read me. And like, I don't even know what this thing does. And like, I have to really like dig into it. If they just told me a story in each of those code bases, they would be already higher on my list. Cause I see that you can get your head out of the code for a second and explain what you're working on and think about what you're working on in a way that's articulate. So put readmes in the code you're working on. Even if you say at the top of the readme, this is really unfinished. This was the intent behind it. This is what I learned, what I got out of it. If you want to spin it up, here's how it works. Here's some interesting parts of the code to look at. That goes so, so far because as engineering managers, people are looking at your code. Put readmes in your code. Referrals, if you've worked with clients, like that's why a big bias of my whole syllabus is like work with these things, like put yourself out there and work on stuff. That goes a long way to have like, yeah, here's all these people who have worked with me. And they can say that like I show up, I work hard and I've actually shipped code for them. That goes a really, really long way. I think this one is related to the readmes in the GitHub code. I see a lot of sample code bases and are sent demo links that are, they try to do 1,000 features. Like here's a full Facebook clone. And everything's broken, everything's unpolished and unfinished. There's typos, there's like placeholder data everywhere that's not very thoughtful. It's like Seinfeld characters or Office characters, and it's like half done and there's broken profile. But here's the thing, simple, but finished and polished. An engineering manager wants to know that you can actually do the work. So instead of doing like so much and trying to spin up a webhook and all these other pieces or you know whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish, cut the scope dramatically, and instead of building Facebook, build like a Twitter clone and only make it do one thing and make it not have require login. Like just keep it very, very, very simple and make it feel like a finished project. Actually like push it over the finish line so it looks like a real thing. I think just in general too, like don't share dead links. If they're on demo dynos, note that it's on a demo dyno so I know you didn't write shitty code. Like, hey, the dyno has to wake up, but then it's good. And also the last hack I'll say here to stand out is you can work with nonprofits as a really good hack to try to get some credibility. Like there's a lot of nonprofits out there looking for technical people who need some help on their engineering, and that puts names on your resume very quickly. I think the other way is like fan sites add a lot of credibility. If you build something like everymac.com, which was like, that's how it started, then it's like, oh, he built this like Apple website. It like feels real. Or like the Pokey API, I think is another great example of this guy builds a Pokemon API. It's something that is real and different and unique and has like some credibility because it's related to this known brand or concept. So that's like a few things that I'll put out there and how to stand out like a candidate. I think we could do a whole episode on that in the future, which could be really interesting actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the common thread between your tips and my tips are basically like the underlying theme there is like, how do you convince a person, an engineering manager, that you know what you're talking about? So it's like, do I know the problem that I'm solving? And am I expressing that clearly in the readme, whether it's like a domain problem or a technical problem? And it's like, tell me something interesting you've worked on, which is the underlying theme there is like, can you talk about a problem that you've solved and be articulate about it? Whether that's like, I didn't know how to scale Redis, or like, we didn't understand this very specific domain problem. Here's how we approached trying to solve it through technical means. Which I think is, I don't know, just be able to talk about the problems that you've solved. And I think that takes you a long way.
Yeah. Sounds good. Question 5, what are some best practices for junior developers to implement early on? You know, things like working on branch other than the master, adding comments to code, like what are the things that a junior dev needs to know? JP, what do you think?
Okay. I'm going to give you like a couple, and these are the ones that really, really grind my gears. And the number one thing is leaving puts or console log statements in your code. That is like, please,
that's a newbie move.
Please do not do that.
Or binding pry, worst case in Rails. Oh, God, Lord. Just like fucking killing it. Yeah.
So I think the best practice there is like, I don't know, I don't want to be like too prescriptive because like, what the hell do I know? But I think like just being very meticulous and paying very close attention to your code and not always just thinking of everything like a sandbox environment can take you a long way, right? Because if you treat your code like, I don't know, production code or whatever, then that is like a good habit that will take you, that will stick with you the rest of your career. Because the last thing you want to do is get into like your first job and you're like leaving puts everywhere and console logs everywhere. And the person reviewing your code is like, I don't want to spend all my time telling you to remove console logs. I need to like look at the higher level thing that this thing is doing and not waste all my time writing all these nitpick comments.
Easy newbie move to miss for sure. That's a good one.
Yes. So that's basically it. Is just like,
all right, nice.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have much for you there.
No, I think that's good. I think that's a really good, very simple one for sure. And so, okay, so one I've got is identifying scope, being able to break up work and iteratively ship. So if someone says, I need XYZ new feature, being able to break down how can I incrementally do that thing.
Interesting. Yeah.
I think that's a really hard skill to learn, and being able to kind of break up work, like, okay, I need this idea of being able to send a tweet. So it's like, okay, well, I need to be able to compose a new tweet first, and then I need to be able to save that tweet to the database, and then be able to show an animation showing the tweet leave. Like, break that up into each shippable pieces, because very often, and we'll get to this in the next question, but very often this thing I see with junior devs, new devs and code bases I've worked with, and new devs in general, is they try to do everything in one pull request and then never really finish any of it. And it's all 80% done and all in a bad state. And like, that has no value to me as an engineering manager. I need something I can merge and deploy. And a partially finished feature is sometimes much more valuable than like a huge PR that's got everything that we're trying to accomplish in that quarter. It's like, well, give me the five things that we can deploy tomorrow that help my users. Like, why are we putting together that typo fix with this other form fix? So it's like, really understand scope and have the discipline to break up the work and iteratively ship. Like, I'm going to do this small piece today and come back tomorrow and do the next piece on it. I think is a really, really valuable skill.
What would you say the best practice is there though? Like, if you were to distill that into like, follow this best practice, what would you call that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say scope creep and defining your work, like taking up, it's project management is what it is. So the best practice is project management and effective project management, which is breaking your work down into executable chunks instead of having this unidentified ambiguous task. You've got something that's more definable and shippable, which is hard to distill into a best practice, but it's really comes down to project management is what that is.
Like organization, like be organized.
Yeah, be organized. But it's more than that, because you can be organized and still do way too much at once.
Very
and
true.
Not ship anything. So you can kind of be organized and still a mess in a way, because nothing's over the finish line. So it's more about having the discipline to just work on this one thing. It's like, if you think of the code base as a car and the car needs an oil change and it needs new tires, don't go draining the oil while you're removing the tires. Like, stay in scope for the thing you're trying to do. It's something that junior devs do constantly that I've worked with. And I constantly like literally go in their PRs, break it up into three PRs. I'm like, okay, now get back to work. And don't like let your work, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, do one thing at a time. And it's hard to know where the bounds are, what's reasonable in like one ticket, if you will, versus like just like doing the whole thing. And it kind of goes back to the eating the elephant one bite at a time. Mm-hmm. I was kind of expressing this before, this idea of like polishing or finishing things. I think testing, any kind of testing or continuous integration you can kind of learn and get familiar with will go a long way to an engineering manager, because if you're a junior, but you're good and understand the value of testing and you write it, then I'm less concerned about you being in my code base, because I have a higher level of confidence bringing on a junior dev. If they're very much like, yeah, I know how to test, I write tests, and I'm not going to ship bad code because it's going to be covered with tests. It might not be the prettiest code, but it's going to work and it's going to fulfill the requirements consistently because at least I understand testing. But I could be wrong on that one.
Yeah, totally. Okay. So I think the common theme here is sort of like, be attentive and know how to break problems down into smaller problems and understand how things can be broken down such that they're more digestible.
Yeah. And I think always a tip is always good for any job is writing, written communication, being an excellent writer. Like, even like knowing how to write up something in Slack and like have the bullet points, item one, item two, item three, so someone can like thoughtfully reply to that. There's a lot of tips there that just like, it makes working with you so refreshing versus like giving me three paragraph blocks about this code. It's like, no, send me the code link, add the comment in GitHub. Like, let's figure out how to communicate complex concepts in writing really, really well. And so that's definitely a skill that I think is really important to pick up for a junior dev. All right, last question. What is it, JP?
Last question. Any common pet peeves of working with junior developers, things for junior developers to avoid doing? How can junior developers make more senior developers' lives easier?
Yeah. You want to take this one first?
Yeah, sure. It's kind of a funny question. It's like maybe kind of a harsh phrasing of like, how do we make senior lives developers easier? I wouldn't necessarily like put it quite harshly. Like I don't,
sure, fair
because
enough.
Like there's developers either that are more senior than me and I don't live to serve, to make sure that their lives are easy. I mean, it's all like,
right, sure.
It's all a team effort. Right. I think,
but if you want to avoid another coder on the team being like, ugh, like
right,
rolling their eyes, then yeah, there's some things. I think you said earlier, don't put console logs, like leave that kind of newbie shit in your code.
Yes.
Or like one huge pet peeve of mine is commented out code.
Oh my God.
A lot of junior devs I've worked with like push a PR with so much commented out code and like understand version control and don't comment code like that. That's, I don't understand how people work that way. It's such a mess.
Yes. Unless there's like a very specific reason that you did it. Like, but how am
very
I supposed to know
rare
that?
It's like 1 in 100 that
right
you should leave commented out code at most.
Right. Yes. So my big like action item, my actionable item there is to just do a pass, like a self code review pass before you decide
yeah
to tag anybody. Like look at the diff, open the pull request, and before anything, take a look at it from like the perspective of somebody else. Like, would this pass your standards if this came across your desk and you had to be, and you had to code review it? Like, what would you say? And I think that helps too, like just catching easy bugs, because like, oh my God, the amount of times that like I've just caught something by like my own code, like caught something by just doing a passive code review. I'm like, oh, this is a very egregious bug that like, I'm so glad I got, like I avoided this, because that would have been really embarrassing. So I think just
for
like
sure
taking the time. And I think there's like a weird rush you get when you like open a pull request that like you just want to like, want to fire it off and just like do the thing and like shove it out into the world. But like, I don't know, maybe that's just an impulse and maybe I'm just trying to find explanations for why console logs are left in code ever. But I just think like taking the time to make sure that things are ready is like can go really far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. And that really comes back to this idea of not pushing it over the finish line. Like, I can't tell you how many pull requests I've gotten from junior devs first on the team that it's like 90% done. It's 80% done. But there's just like, oh, I didn't take the time to do the tablet, or I don't have these two test cases. And it's just like, take the extra second and finish the code, like just finish it all the way. And I think it's a confidence issue of like wanting to make sure a senior puts, I don't know what it is, but that's a common thing that I have with people first joining the team, is like not fully closing out the entire ticket, which is really can be very frustrating. I would way rather have something be 8 hours late and be finished than be on time and not be finished. But that's me. So you have to talk with your own boss about what they would think. I think the other piece is responsive design, especially if you're going into the front end world. One that so many people miss all the time. I keep my display, my monitor on like native 4K resolution. And so many times I open up a website and it just looks like absolute garbage on anything that's high resolution or large. And like a lot of people out there have these 32-inch 5K monitors and you don't consider that. Or like iPhone 5. A lot of people, I can't tell you how many tickets I've gotten from more junior devs, and I bring that responsive size down to an iPhone 5. God forbid I go smaller than iPhone 6 and everything blows up and it just looks like shit. And so I think keep in mind that it's got to look good across all devices. So take that extra second and make sure it looks good across all devices and that the interactivity works across all devices and in different orientations. And it's a total pain in the ass. But I think that's the other edge case that I commonly see junior devs miss. Like, definitely the first 5 or 6 tickets from junior devs, it's like, hey, you missed a horizontal tablet and now we have this huge bug and a bunch of users can't comment.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens all the time. So I think that closes out the questions. Any final thoughts, JP?
I have one more final thought. And it's something that I've noticed with junior devs, and I noticed it with myself as well early on in my career. And it's that I think that junior devs have a tendency to hide information. So sometimes you'll be like, hey, how come you didn't, like, what about this edge case? And they'll know about it, but you have to like tease it out of them. And it's sort of like, oh yeah, well, I didn't do that because such and such and such and blah, blah, yada, yada, yada. And it's like, I think it's much easier to withhold information when you're early on in your career, because like you're scared that it's going to get you in trouble for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done that too. But oftentimes when you think about like communicating with other people, if you're on the receiving end of that, like it kind of sucks to like be not in the loop. And it's easy to want to just like avoid being in trouble. But I think that like communicating everything you know about a problem and just being upfront and being like, hey, I know about these edge cases. I'm going to follow up with it in a separate ticket because of scope creep, for example, right?
Yep.
Or I think we can break this problem out, because then that's like
or
the difference.
Like, it's
of
just
like,
not a priority right now.
Right.
Like a quick example, like let's say you're building an admin backend and it's like, hey, you know, just put in the pull request a bullet point. This does not work on mobile devices. Like, I know that it's unsupported right now, but just call out those edge cases. Or, hey, when you do XYZ, things break. It's still unsolved and it's up in the air, but I think we're okay because it seems like an edge case to me. So like, call those things out, and like, when in doubt, just add a bullet point in the PR. I think it's good to show decisiveness and thought behind it. I think that goes a really, really long way instead of withholding the information. It's way better to just add more detail in the PR. Now, I don't think you should ping your manager on Slack every time you have one of those questions, but just like write it up all in the PR in an async doc. And then like, here's what I did and the decisions I made when I did this, not in code comments, in the actual GitHub comments or however you hand off your code in the ticket.
Yeah.
That's a good thought, JP.
Because it's like the difference of like, this is incomplete versus like, I thought of everything and I made a very specific decision to cut it out for like a very good reason.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That makes a ton of sense. All right. Well, you want to wrap up with some picks?
I do. And I got to say before that I'm really interested to get feedback on this episode, because like, this is just like you and I talking about things through the lens of like somewhat experienced developers. And for all I know, we could have just been spewing out stuff.
That's so true.
Way
like that
over
could have just
head.
Been total nonsense to the person listening. So we will do a follow-up if it was like, ask a set of follow-up questions and we'll go into them. So for the friend who prompted this episode, like, we're more than happy to help further. I want this to be like an evergreen resource that we kind of update maybe annually for people, because I need something to refer people to. So hopefully, and we appreciate the friend for gathering these questions, and hopefully we can get some more, and hopefully it was helpful.
Yes, totally. Okay. So, my pick to wrap up this episode is a hilarious pick, because I texted you and I was like, hey, by the way, full stop, I just found literally the best like JavaScript library for carousels. And I was like, it's this thing called SEMA Slider,
I think it's called.
SEMA Slider. And I was just like super stoked on it, because it like worked for my very specific use case. And I was like, oh, I'm going to make this my pick. And then you came back and was like, I had the worst time with that library. It's absolute garbage. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, it's so funny. I had the opposite experience. I hated this library. And I think it was just, I was pushing it to do way too much. So I'd love to hear why you like this slider. And to be real, to be clear, a carousel is like the idea of like a slider of images or text and having a spinning carousel of things that loop around. So why did you like it? I'm curious.
I liked it because I wanted something that I could just plop right into a Rails app and just like paste in a CDN, like for a quick proof of concept, and like plug in some, I don't know, some images and just have it work. And I tried like two or three other libraries where I had to like go through Yarn and I had to like do all this configuration and like you have to import like a CSS library, and it just like things didn't work. And within like 30 seconds, I got it first try on this library.
Wow.
And it just worked. And I was like, this is amazing. This is the best fucking thing since sliced bread. And so I was like, this is great. And there's no like dependencies on like jQuery or whatever. It's literally just vanilla JavaScript.
I do like that about it. It's just vanilla JavaScript. And I do like that about this library. And to be clear, my experience, I think the problem was I was just pushing it to do way too much. Mm-hmm. I had pages that had four different sliders in one page, and I needed to dynamically set the state of each of those sliders. It was just, at that point, we should have just broken out a SEMA and gone into our own custom component probably. But it was pushing it too much. I think, yeah, that makes a lot of sense in your context. I'm actually surprised. So you're using Tailwind in that project, right?
I am, yes.
Tailwind has no existing slider component, like a carousel? Oh, because I usually reach for, because I'm in Bootstrap most of the time, so I usually reach for the Bootstrap carousel, and I've found it to be pretty well supported and work pretty well. But I think next time I need something vanilla, I will reach for this, if I'm not trying to push it so freaking hard. Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. My pick is a random JavaScript library, so very similar, and it's called Rough Notation. It's a really interesting JavaScript library. I'm currently rebuilding my personal site just for fun. And it does like very scratchy animations. So you can like dynamically highlight, circle, and like underline things. Oh. And it's just really charming and fun. And it supports vanilla JavaScript, React, Svelte, Vue. You can like play with it however you want.
Oh, look at this.
Look at the demos, and it's just like really fun. And so I'm going to make it so like every link you add gets like underlined or circled, and just, it's just a fun library, and it looks so great. It's like really fun. This roughnotation.com, and it's just such a fun JavaScript library. I'm like really stoked on it. I'm going to really embrace it for my personal site. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
That's cool. Yeah, this is great. Hopefully no one, hopefully doesn't become like an overused thing where you're like, oh, this person's using representation.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I hope this episode was helpful. We're really looking forward to feedback from it. And we will see you guys for next episode, likely a follow-up to this one, answering a ton of different questions.
Cool. See you guys.